welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And guess what? The remedy for boredom has arrived, and it's Friday. And guess what? The biggest podcast ever is happening right here on Talk is Jericho, March 15th, 2017. Jericho versus Foley. That's right. Mick Foley makes his long-awaited, much-requested Talk is Jericho debut on March 15th, 2017. Foley and Jericho, it's going to be the biggest podcast ever. So set a reminder in your phone. And also, I got another big podcast today. Maybe the biggest drummer ever, at least one of the greatest drummers ever, and one of the tallest drummers ever. Height-wise, he's the biggest drummer. Pretty damn close. Chad Smith from the Red Hot Chili Peppers is here. Good friend of mine. I got to tell you, I really loved doing this interview. It's one of my favorite interviews I've ever done. And it's one of the reasons why I love doing Talk is Jericho, because it gives me a chance to sit down and have a chat with my friends. And I've known Chad since 2002. We met at Madison Square Garden at a celebrity hockey game we were playing. If you've read my books, you've read the story, and you're going to hear it anyways upcoming on this show. But I've never really had a chance. I mean, I've talked to Chad, seen him many times over the years, but to sit down and talk to him for an hour and 20 minutes, whatever this podcast is, it was just it's just a great experience, getting a chance to sit down with your buds and actually have in-depth conversations. Really, really cool. And Chad is great. What a tremendous guest. So much fun. Amazing drummer for the Red Hot Chili Peppers, whose new record, The Getaway, is out today. And I was talking to Wise Cousin Chad yesterday. I don't think the Chili Peppers have ever put out a bad album. They might have a couple songs here and there that didn't work. But basically, since Chad joined the band in 1988 with Mother's Milk, all the way up to today, the body of work speaks for itself. Probably 90% great tunes. So I'm really excited to hear The Getaway. I've heard the title track. I've heard Dark Necessities. Both of them very, very, very cool tracks. The classic Chili Peppers, modern day, lazy, retrospective California sound. So Chad has been their drummer for years, and you know, he's been so solid, rock solid, working in so many other bands via producer Rick Rubin. The Getaway is not produced by Rick Rubin, by the way. They teamed up with Danger Mouse for this album, and you hear how and why that happened. And we're going to talk about Chad's doppelganger. That's right, Will Ferrell. Ever seen Chad? Never said, he looks like Will Ferrell. Well, if you haven't seen the big drum-off, Ferrell versus Chad Smith, on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon, it's one of the most entertaining things you'll see. They look exactly the same. It's so ridiculous. Chad's going to tell us all that story, what happened, how it led up to it. He's going to tell us what it was like meeting and recording with Johnny Cash, a Rick Rubin-produced record that Chad played drums on. And we're going to take it way, way, way back to find out how Chad ended up in the Chili Peppers in the first place. There's also a super popular Red Hot Chili Peppers song that almost never got released. Wait until you hear that story. You won't believe it. Wait till you hear so many stories. Chad is a funny guy. He's very excitable. He's very charismatic. He's the greatest drummer, I think, in rock and roll today. From the Red Hot Chili Peppers, Chad Smith, and his crazy stories about being mistaken for Will Ferrell. Coming up, one of my favorite interviews I've done in a while. But first, I want to talk about one of my favorite documentaries I've seen. It just came out on Blu-ray and DVD, The Resurrection of Jake the Snake. I can't say enough about this documentary because it's not about wrestling. It's not about yoga. It's just about a human being getting his life back on track. A very inspiring story about one man's battle back from the brink of death, literally, to reclaim his life, family, and career, and reclaim himself. And even if you did check it out when it was in theaters, you're still going to want to check out the collector's edition DVD because of all the extras that DDP and his team included. There's over 20 bonus features, including a commentary track narrated by Dallas, Jake, and director Steve Yu. And right now, if you go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho, you can get 10% off the collector's edition Blu-ray or DVD and anything else you order for a limited time. You all know what DDP Yoga has done for me. Save my wrestling career, save my singing career, everything. Save my quality of life. And you can see what it did for Jake the Snake. DDP saved my quality of life, and DDP saved Jake the Snake's life, period. So if you check out this documentary, you will be blown away, and you'll see how DDP Yoga literally saved Jake's life. So get yourself a copy of this documentary at ddpyoga.com/Jericho. You won't regret it. Be inspired. And then once you get inspired, then you give DDP Yoga and the DDP Yoga Now app a try yourself. Change your life. Go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho and get 10% off the Resurrection of Jake the Snake, and also 10% off a DDP yoga program, which you are going to love. It is going to change your life. If you've been listening to this show for the last year, 2 years, and you're sitting on the fence or you're making a joke, oh, it's a DDP yoga ad. This is no joke. This is the real deal. And this is why I believe so much in this workout. It really changed my life. It can change yours as well. Give it a shot and go check it out now. DDPyoga.com/Jericho. So, Chad, set the tone for the last time I saw you.
You and I, Barclay Center, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, we're hanging out. I don't know how I got the front table.
At the Hall of Fame, right. You were right in the front row.
I was right in the front. And our managers, Q-Prime, managed Metallica, and Lars was introducing Deep Purple, and Black Keys, who introduced Steve Miller. So I think that was probably why.
Reason why.
But little did I know that I'm sitting on the edge of the table where the aisle is, and 3 feet away is where every inductee is going to walk up to say their acceptance speech. So right, stand up and start, "There's Chicago," and they're like, I was like the greeter.
I was like, and there's like 12 guys in Chicago.
And half of them are going, "Hey, nice to meet you, Will." You know, David Coverdale said that. Glenn got so mad. He's like, "I can't believe he said that."
Coverdale thought you were Will Ferrell. Was he joking? He really thought you were Will Ferrell?
I think he did. It's okay.
Right. You've owned it now.
I just go, yep.
Yeah, for sure. At this point.
Yep. Nice to meet you. Go ahead.
Absolutely.
I'm not going to argue with you on the way up to your acceptance speech.
Yeah,
sir.
Exactly.
Mr. Coverdale.
Yeah. So you're sitting there.
So we're sitting there.
I'm there too. And we always, my cousin Chad and I were just discussing, the only other Chad that I know besides you. Yep. We always get to go because we know some people. So we always go every year and we have tickets to go on the floor, but we don't have tickets to sit at a table. So we're standing in the back.
Okay.
And you and I are texting each other. Are you here? Yep. Are you here? Yeah. Because we're both huge Cheap Trick fans. So you're there. Yeah. And we're texting each other.
And the end of the show, and Cheap Trick's playing, and you roll up. And I'm like, oh, there he is. All right, it's cool. And we are singing and rocking out to
it
Cheap Trick.
It was awesome.
Who were, to me, by far the best thing of the night.
By far. Because that was kind of a – I don't ever want to use the word boring because these guys are all legends. But it was kind of a non-energetic night of performances, shall we say.
Everybody on stage was
Chicago
plus.
Deep Purple.
And I love those guys. But it wasn't. Yeah, no. It was. There was not a lot of fire, you know. But Cheap Trick brought it, and they were great. And it was great to see Bunny playing.
So good.
And he played great. And speaking of Bunny, so we're sitting there, and the show's over, and we're like having a great time. And his wife is leaving the table, and I'd spoken to her briefly, you know, because I know Bunny, and I said, "Hey, Bunny, man, how you doing?" And so she looked at me and "How are you? Nice to see you." So on the way out, she's walking out, and you and I are standing, and I said, "Oh, congratulations." And she walks around, she turns, and she looks at me, and she goes, "I'm not pregnant." I didn't really think that she was.
No.
She's probably how old?
62, maybe.
That's being nice. And it was... You kind of had to be there, but
she looked right at us and said, "I'm not pregnant."
Like, dead serious.
Completely out of context, and I'm now trying to piece together the story. It's now become our catchphrase.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, just text each other, "I'm not pregnant," because it was super funny. And I'm trying to piece it together.
I hope she was just being funny.
Did somebody say to her that maybe someone thought she was pregnant? But then again, like you said, she's in her 60s, so I don't know what the backstory was.
I hope that it's just her dry sense of humor.
Maybe, yeah.
You know, yeah, and she was just like, you know. When anyone says congratulations to me, that's my response. I'm not pregnant.
Right. Well, I just use that.
I'm glad to hear
that. That's my go-to. But that, I mean, that was that.
We laughed for.
We did. Now, so but and that's part of the thing. And we can talk about you guys going in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame a few years ago.
Yeah.
Like, did you have to pay to sit at that table on the Cheap Trick night?
Somebody did.
Okay, somebody paid. Because you're paying like big bucks to get those tables.
The tables. And I think that was one of the things Steve Miller was talking about.
Right.
He was like, you know, I can't bring my band because, you know, Hall of Fame.
It's like 10 grand a seat or something like that. He was not happy.
No, he was not. And then he went in the press room and really, really went for it. So I heard.
When
his speech, you get the end, he kind of, you know, "I wish they'd be more transparent and the Hall of Fame should do this and that." And, you know, I was like, okay, that's cool. And women, and yeah, that's great, you know, and then. I think he just went off.
Because there's some people that are on the side of the coin of like the Hall of Fame is cool to be in, and others will go, "Oh, we don't care."
Yeah.
But
the only people that never showed up was the Sex Pistols and Axl. So obviously you care, right?
If you're alive, I think you show. Well, no, and the Van Halen guys did.
That's right.
Just Sam and Mike.
That's right.
Yeah. Eddie. And they were bummed. They were like, you know, oh, I wish, you know, the rest of the guys. Yeah, Eddie,
Roth
Al.
Never showed up.
Roth didn't show up.
Yeah.
No.
So, but when you guys went in, it seemed like everyone was pretty happy.
Oh,
to be
yeah,
in there.
We were ecstatic.
Yeah.
I mean, I you know, the Hall of Fame, I think it's really cool. I think that it can be, I understand why some people look at it, oh, it's this political thing, and it's this New York, you know, these New York music guys who kind of run it, and it's who they want, and you know, bands like Yes, and I don't think they go for prog, that sort of thing, mm-hmm. too much. There's certain types of music, I think, that they tend to lean toward that they feel is important and influential and deserve it of the Hall of Fame. But, you know, yeah, it's a bit of a New York boys club a little bit, but I think it's great.
It's pretty cool, right?
It's totally yeah. cool. I want at the there's a third floor of the Hall of Fame in Cleveland, and you walk up and it's where all the names are on little plaques, and that's kind of all that's up there. And it's just kind of dimly lit, and there should be some woo music in the background. And you walk down the thing. I'm walking down the thing. I'm looking at all. I don't know how many people are in 700 or maybe 800 by now, but this few years back. And I'm walking down. I'm looking, and it's alphabetical. And I'm looking at all the names. I'm like, wow, you know, Bo Diddley and Chuck Berry, and going through the thing. And we get down to the R's, and there's my name next to the Rolling Stones and the Ramones.
right. The R's.
Ramones. Chad from
Red Hot.
REM. I was just like, that little guy from Detroit is in the fucking Hall of Fame. This is unbelievable.
Yeah.
It really, like, that really, like, hit me. I was like, oh, this is cool. And, you know, it's kind of like a fancy hard rock a little bit with all the costumes. Mm-hmm. And it's cool. Some interactive stuff. It's pretty cool. But, you know, being in it for obviously the longevity of your career, you know, we've been doing it a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I think it's 25 years from your first recording or yeah. something. That's the thing. And, you know, just, yeah, it's pretty amazing. And, you know, I'm just, yeah, super honored. And flattered.
Even just to think about the Peppers being in there when you guys first started, and I know you weren't the band at this beginning, but the Peppers were always very weird and eclectic, and it was a mix of hard rock and funk and blues and jazz and pop music.
Yeah.
Peppers didn't fit in anywhere.
No.
Late 80s, you know, at that point in time. And now the Peppers are this whole world unto themselves that everyone's like this iconic band.
You know, I would have never thought. I joined a band in the end of 1988. And the band been together since 1983, and they'd made three records. And I didn't really know. I mean, I knew who the Red Hot Chili Peppers were, the guys with the socks on their dicks. But I wasn't like a big fan of their music. And at that time, they had three records, and they were kind of an underground sort of college radio band. You know,
exactly, frat boy rock in a lot of ways.
Yeah, you know, doing this funk and punk and rock, and then. I joined, and John Frusciante had just joined right before me. The guitar player was 18 years old, his first band he'd ever been in. It was his favorite band.
Wow.
Yeah. And he's like, I'm in the Chili Peppers. And I remember little John Frusciante with his red mohawk. And I was just like, cool. This is a band. They have a record deal. I'll try out for this band. Yeah, sure. And I moved from Detroit literally 6 months earlier, where I grew up.
Did you see an ad in a paper? Or?
No, it was a friend of a friend kind of thing, mm-hmm. where this girl was dating a guy that I knew from Detroit who had dated John, and they knew they were looking for a drummer, and my friend told this girl that I ate drums for breakfast. I got your guys from Detroit chatting. I mean, great. East drums. So I bring my drums to the Hully Gully rehearsal place and audition, and I'm walking in with my drums, and Flea looks at me, and he's like, is that your breakfast? I'm like, what the fuck? And he's got this green mohawk. And at the time, I was like, rocker dude.
Yeah, you were always the metal guy with the long hair.
Yeah, long hair, bandana, probably Metallica shirt. You're like, oh, get this guy out of here. Like, and this was Sunset Strip, 88, you know, Guns N' Roses, like,
sure,
all the, which was great, but not what the Chili Peppers were about. They were about, you know, the punk and, you know, what kind of funny haircut you had and your tattoos and all that. So they're looking at me like, oh, gotta get this guy out of here, you know. And we just started to play, and it all went out the window.
Just the magic and the chemistry right off the bat?
They were, I remember Anthony just laughing hysterically. Like, and I was, we're playing, we're like, ah, ah, ah. We're just like, this is kind of what we do today. Although back then it was all really hard and fast. And I was like, yeah, come on, motherfucker. And I remember Anthony's just cracking up, and I'm like, I don't know if that's good, but whatever. He didn't sing or anything, but we just jammed.
Cracking up at the chemistry that was going on.
Or whatever. Yeah, yeah. Like, yeah. Later he was like, it was like Roman candles were going off. He was like, it was like crazy. He goes, I just never seen anything like it. He was like, and you were like pushing Flea, and nobody had done that. Or, but I was just like, I'm just playing. It's fun. These guys are good. This sounds good to me. So, yeah, that was it. And then, we made a record right away in Mother's Milk in 89. And, you know, it was really, I would have never thought the Red Hot Chili Peppers would be
in the Rock and Roll
Hall of Fame or still playing, making relevant music in 2016. And people still coming to see us and having young fans. And it's amazing.
It's almost really become amazing. Become a multi-generational band, like the Stones or Kiss of our era. And now the Peppers are the same, where you have young kids coming that
we do.
I think it's just as cool as the people have been there since 88.
You know, and we never try to, you know, oh, I want to sound like this, or we want to be like that, or never have we ever tried to repeat ourselves or any kind of trend in music or anything like that. We just do what we do and try to keep changing as people and as musicians and as band and write better songs. And I think any great artist, I'm not saying we're great, but any artist, I think they need to do that, you know, and keep
eclectic, right?
Yeah, and just looking for new things to make you grow. And all the influences that you do everywhere you go and people see and art and everything all goes into that and all goes into the person that you are, and that's going to come out of your personality of your instrument.
Sure.
And then the four of us, you know, the chemistry is there, like a team, whatever it is. It's really a team, you know, being in a band. The chemistry is so important, especially in our group where we don't have like one guy that writes the songs or it's a real democratic. Everybody has their creative input and everyone is encouraged to come in and, you know, this is what I think in the way we write music. You know, we improvise and jam a lot and songs come out of that, or someone's got an idea, whether it's a bass line or a guitar part or a piano thing, and somebody will come in, but it's never a finished song. It's just, hey, I got this idea. And then we all jump in and do our thing. And I think that's why we have a more identifiable sound, if we do. And also, as soon as Anthony opens his mouth, it's going to sound like a Chili Pepper.
Yes.
So we can keep doing anything. And we're really fortunate to be able to do that as long as it's good, like anything. You know?
Well, but that's the thing. There's only one, like, you know, like AC/DC or Slayer that can do a very similar style of music their whole career. But if you go to, like, you look at the Beatles or U2 or Zeppelin or Guns N' Roses, there's a lot of different styles of music, Pink Floyd, and the Peppers are like that as well.
You know, I mean, and if you've been around, you got to keep going.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to keep doing the same thing, even though people say, oh, I wish, you know, you would do more songs like Blood Sugar Sex Magik or more like California Kid. I'm like, well, we did those.
Yeah.
And I'm not 20. We're not 25 anymore. Yeah. You know, this is what we do now. Well, you know, you go to Germany and the Germans are so straightforward. Oh, I'm not as good as Blood Sugar Sex Magik.
I know, right? And they'll tell it right to your face.
Oh, right to your face.
Yeah, I had the two.
You were better last time.
Yes, yes. Sin and Bones is a much better record than Do You Want to Start a War? And I'm like, okay, how do I answer that? Sorry. We'll try better next time.
Yeah. Well, it's okay. It's not as good as, you know. Yeah. I wish you would make more songs like Give It Away, you know. So, you know, we play those songs and we love them, but this is who we are and what we do now. And
yeah.
And so... You know, you gotta go out in the water a little bit, and you see your toes. You can't feel the bottom, and take risks. And that's the kind of music that's what I like. Those are the artists and that I like that. I don't like the sort of formula and thing that sounds.
Were you always that way? Like when you came out from Detroit in '88, were you looking to play in a metal band, or were you always kind of an eclectic player?
Because
we talk, you love Kiss, you love Cheap Trick. I mean, we've been to concerts together.
I love that. I mean, of the band, I'm definitely the rock guy for sure. Not to say that they don't like rock music, like Flea loves Led Zeppelin and AC/DC, but
Hendrix, they all love Hendrix.
Yeah, but growing up. For me, and I have to thank my brother who I was with at the Hall of Fame.
Too. Okay.
Yeah, that was him. And he was like, because it was, they show it on TV.
Yeah.
And like, they were showing like full, screenshots of me and him. And then he's like, man, I had more people calling me up. I'm like, yeah. Well, we were kind of there in the front.
Yeah. There's one great shot that I took of you and I. They showed us about Cheap Trick.
During Cheap Trick.
Yeah, we're both rocking.
Awesome. But Brad was a huge influence on me, 2 years older than me. He played a guitar, and I started playing really young, and he just loved all those late 60s, early 70s, like hard rock blues bands from England.
Mm-hmm.
So the Sabbaths, the Zeppelins, Humble Pie, Deep Purple, Queen, Bowie, Hendrix, although, he's
classics,
American. Yeah, like the classic rock, but he loved all that stuff, and early on, like, he would have Queen 2, and it wasn't until they got super popular. And so I listened to all his records, and wanted to play that kind of music early on. Obviously, those are all great bands. And for drumming, as I, was starting out drumming, so I'm listening to Ian Paice, John Bonham, Keith Moon, Mitch Mitchell, like the best drummers.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love that music. I will love it forever. I mean, I never get tired of it. But then, you move on and you start to listen to other stuff. And probably around early 80s, I started to get more into like funk music. I was in a band in Detroit called Pharaoh. Yeah. Look for that Pharaoh album.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Up on YouTube now, probably somewhere.
Oh. And I play with there was a percussionist in the band.
Okay.
His name was Larry Fratangelo, and he came from Parliament Funkadelic. He was in Detroit, and he played in P-Funk. And he taught me a lot we rehearsed and wrote songs for about almost a year. And he just he was older than me, took me under his wing. I could play, but I was 20 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And he just I don't know. He saw that I was kind of not even a diamond. I don't know what in the rough.
Yeah.
But we just hung out, and he turned me on to so much cool music, like Tower of Power, and we would ride in his car, smoke joints, and go on the way to rehearsal. And he would just always play me all this Isley Brothers, James Brown, Meters, just like stuff that I didn't really know.
You hadn't heard before.
Not really heard. Maybe heard some James Brown, but
to really listen to it, though.
And pick it apart. Listen in the second verse. Hear how the drummer breaks it down, and then he lays out and doesn't come in on a two, and the band has to get quiet because they can't hear the drums. It's like that's playing with dynamics. That's being musical. I mean, normally I just bash away. So he really helped me go from being a drummer to a musician.
Hmm.
And I credit Larry. That year was like going to college, music, mm-hmm. music school. And he was fantastic. So from then on, and then my mind and my ears kind of opened up to thinking more like a more well-rounded musician. So how to play with dynamics, how to build a song, sort of arrangement 101 stuff. Oh, you don't have to do a fill every time, make it mean something and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Which before that I was just like, hey, look at this latest lick from Rush I got. I'm going to stick it in the song. It doesn't matter.
Right.
It's like, no, it doesn't work. And the song is king. That song, you got to play for the song. So, I always grew up listening to Motown, and it was always on the radio, and that's just some of the funky stuff. So, it's in there. It was all in there, but I'd never been able to really sort of tap into that. And, Sly, and there's just so much great mm-hmm. music that I just sort of went back and sort of did my homework, and I really wanted to get better. And I think it's normal to when you're a young kid, you want to play a bunch of stuff and fast, and like a lot of kids these days, they just want to play super fast. And that's great, but I don't know how many songs you hear, and I want to be songs on the radio. You know, I was like, you don't hear, you know,
blast beats.
Yeah, you know, it's great, and I admire it, but it's not what I want to do. You know, and so I just wanted to make songs feel good, and you know, I just wanted to play real powerfully. It's kind of the way I've always played, and yeah, just you know.
How about you know? You're talking about you know you're tailor-made to play with the Peppers from a musician standpoint. But another thing about the Peppers right from the start was always this crazy image that they had and the gimmicks that they had. I was watching something the other day, just stumbled upon it. Maybe it was Woodstock or something where Flea's just naked. He's playing completely naked.
And he was literally like, he used to do that. And you could get away with it a bit more like back in the late 80s.
No one had phones.
Or cops. Or yeah. I remember hightailing it, man, in Green Bay one time. Running from the cops
because
you're showing pubic hair on stage. That's it's against the law. We must arrest you. So you can when we weren't sort of more popular, we sort of get away with a little. We used to do crazy shit.
Like what other kind of stuff? I mean, like the light bulbs at Woodstock.
We did the light bulbs at Woodstock, but we did. I remember in Texas, of all places, we were on tour in Mother's Milk time, and we did hors d'oeuvres, and we just put our cocks through paper plates. And for the opening band, we came out hors d'oeuvres, and then we thought it'd be fun just to do cock percussion, where you just come out and you just beat your dick on a microphone. Like we were kids.
Yeah.
This is our idea of like funny or fun. We can't get away with any of that.
You're right.
You'd be like spending the night in jail for a while. So yeah, I think we felt Woodstock was so big. And it's typical with us, nothing too planned out. He's just standing, we're getting ready to go on, and he's like, "Should I go naked?" I'm like, "Fuck yeah." He's like, "Really?" I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "Okay." Rip.
And that's it.
He may have had like just his tidy whiteys on anyway.
Oh, right.
But he just, like, they're not going to fucking pull us off stage because they don't.
And just don't acknowledge it, and you watch his ass the whole show.
I've seen his ass many times.
Is this something where you sit down together, like, for example, the light bulb thing, because it's like, okay, we're going to do, does anyone have any ideas? Or do they just say, Chad, put this on? Or do you say, put this on?
You know what? I felt bad because it was actually Dave Navarro's first real gig with us.
Yeah.
When Dave joined our band, we maybe did a warm-up here in town, but that was our first gig. And he came from Jane's Addiction. They were real arty, and they were a great, great band. And poor guy, probably the last thing he wanted to do was put on a fucking, look like a baked potato and a silver thing, a giant light bulb head. And he's like, oh, I'm in the wacky Chili Peppers now. Yeah, we used to be more conscious of trying to, you know, just do weird shit and just kind of shake things up. Always very, you know, free about sexuality and everything else. And, you know, because America's pretty uptight when it comes to all that stuff. Mm. So you're in Europe, huh?
Especially 20 years ago, even more so.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In Europe, what, though?
In Europe, they were like, they loved it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we used to do that shit all the time. It was great.
You mentioned
more free.
You mentioned playing with Dave, and now Josh is the guitar player. And it's such an important part of the Chili Peppers legacy is John Frusciante, you mentioned.
Yeah.
And when he left, 95, came back afterwards. Was it hard when you did the last record, the first, without John in a long time?
Yeah, well, you know, John Frusciante is an amazing musician. Maybe one of the, if not the most incredible musicians I've ever had the pleasure of playing with.
Right.
He's amazing, and I've obviously known him since he was 18. He was in the band early, and we got, it was right when we were kind of went from, the band went from this sort of kind of, we were talking about kind of a punky underground, and Mother's Milk came out, Higher Ground was on MTV, and we got a little bit more poppy. We had a gold album, wow. But we were still playing, you know, theaters, and we weren't playing arenas or anything, and then when Blood Sugar came out and music sort of shifted, and that was a great record that we did. And he was really a big part of that, as we all were, but he had felt like he was fully part of the band. He was writing great songs. I think felt more comfortable. The chemistry was really there. It was a really exciting time for us. And you know, him having him being in the band, he was amazing. He's an amazing guitarist, amazing arranger, songwriter.
Great harmonies on his vocals.
Incredible. Yeah. And a student of music, you know, just like if he was into, you know, the girl groups from the 60s, he would go deep and find the, why, you know, the great, like whatever he was into, drugs,
he's going all in.
He's all in.
Yeah.
And then done. And then now I'm into this. Now I'm into American history. Now I'm into, you know, that's his personality. Mm. But musically, he was so passionate about all kinds of music, electronic music, all kinds of stuff. But it was a big part of our band, and I love John, and I'm so thankful to be able to have that time with him. And when he can, and I think it was tough for him being so young, and the band kind of blew up. And, you know, you go from 2 years ago, I've never been in a band before, I'm 18 years old, to you're playing big arenas and your records all over MTV, and it's, you know, he couldn't handle it.
Mm-hmm.
So he left the group, and then he came back, and we had him for another 10 years and made some amazing music again. He's incredible. So, yeah, John is, we love John and only wish him the best. And, you know, he's happy doing his thing. He just didn't want to do it anymore. He didn't want to do what it takes to be in a band, mm-hmm. which is not just write songs and record. It's a lot of other things.
Being on the road, being away from home, all that sort of stuff.
Everything. Yeah. It takes up your whole life there. So having Josh come in the group, we knew him. And he had actually played guitar on our last tour. We brought him in to play second guitar.
Oh, okay.
And we could do some other songs that needed backing stuff. He played keyboards. Josh plays everything: keys, bass, drums, guitar, sing. He's amazing. And he was just like the obvious choice for us. Mm-hmm. And we knew him, so he didn't have to like go through the dating process.
Yeah, that's hard too. Yeah.
Right? You know.
Yeah.
Because like, the guy's great, but like, is he a weirdo?
It's
like,
not just the time on stage, it's the time on the bus and
everything
and hotels
else.
And flying and everything.
And,
yeah.
You know, yeah, what kind of guy is he?
Right.
You know? So we knew him, so that was good. But yeah, coming into our group and it was such an established thing. And you know, it was like, okay, you're in. Okay, let's write songs now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, boom, let's go. And we wrote a bunch of songs. Record's good. I like I'm With You record, but again, it's now he's toured with us. We've hung out musically, personally. He feels more comfortable. So this record feels a lot to me like when we did, John and I did Mother's Milk. We were new guys and then integrated into the band, made Blood Sugar. It's a similar feeling to mm-hmm. me. It makes sense that he would just be more comfortable. And he's a great songwriter, great musician. We're lucky to have him.
So yeah. When you guys start playing, like for the new record, for example, The Getaway, and you mentioned before, you just show up in a rehearsal studio and say, "What do you got?
What do you got?
Yeah,
hope it's good or not." Well, Flea has a little place in down in Silver Lake, and we go in there and we just jam. We just literally just I'll start a beat or he'll play a bass line mm-hmm. or somebody will have a riff or not. Sometimes it's cool. Sometimes it's like, nah.
Shit, yeah.
Yeah, right? You're like, yeah. Miss. But, and sometimes song ideas come from that. And then other times somebody will have something from home, you know, that they wrote or came up with a one part or two parts. Never a fully finished song. So those are the two ways that we sort of write our songs. And then, so we did that for about 8 months.
For The Getaway.
Yes, yeah. For this record. Exactly. It's coming out June 17th.
It might even be today, depending on what's
going on. Yeah,
it's out today.
Yeah, who cares?
Or yesterday.
We're in time travel here. And yeah, I'm in Europe right now.
Yeah.
And so we were like, cool, yeah, we got a bunch of great songs. Everyone's feeling good about it. And then the producer thing comes out, like who should we use? And we've always used Rick Rubin.
Did you use him on I'm With You as well?
Yeah.
Okay, wow. So this is like, yeah, that's like 10...
It's six albums and...
22 years.
5 years
or whatever it is. Straight, yeah.
91.
Yeah. Something yeah, 91. 91. That's Blood Sugar, yeah.
And we love Rick, and Rick is amazing. He's an incredible producer. Mm-hmm. But in the past, though, we've always like, maybe we should try, you know, this guy we've met with, you know, Daniel Lanois and different producers, and then we've always kind of, Rick's the one who's going to make these songs the best, you know, and we've always worked with him, and we've had great success with mm-hmm. Rick. But we just felt, you know, this time, maybe we should actually get somebody else. And we knew Brian Burton, a.k.a. Danger Mouse. We knew him. Actually, when he was in Gnarls Barkley, they opened for us on a Stadium Arcadium tour.
Gotcha.
So we knew him personally and knew what he's done. He produced a lot of bands, had a lot of great music. So we met with him. And we played him our songs that we had. And he's like, yeah, these are good. Oh, I like that one. Maybe that one, not so much. Yeah, I really like that one. Typical producer stuff. We had a bunch of songs. We always write, like, way too many. Mm-hmm. But they're not always good. So that's why you write 25 and you end up with 12 whatever. But he's like, cool, man. I really like those. And, you know, that's great. And let's do it. And we're like, cool. So we're about 3 weeks away from recording. And Flea decides to go snowboarding with Lars. Two very competitive men.
Yeah.
And the last run of the day, you know, they're probably with their kids. I think they were with their kids, you know, and the kids went in and, okay, let's go. And so he's snowboarding, of course. He breaks his arm pretty bad, really bad, actually. And so everything stops for 6 months. It took 6 months. It was a bad break. And he was freaking out. It was like,
it was scary for a player, right? Yeah.
And it was like fingers were numb. And he was like, it was a really hard time for him. Mm-hmm. He was emotionally and spiritually really drained. I felt so bad for him. And he finally came out of it. And he's totally fine. But it took a long time. It was like 2 months. Doctor said 2 months, I'll be back. I'm like, 3 months, 4 months.
Maybe so, 2 months if you're a normal guy, but 2 months trying to play those bass lines and have that control.
Well, yeah, he's not going doo-doo.
He's not in an office answering phones.
No.
Right?
No, yeah. Exactly. So, you need all.
Yeah.
And the pinky couldn't move. Yeah, the whole thing. So if it was a leg, it would be fine.
Yeah,
we did with Blood Sugar. I think he had a broken foot or something.
That's the new thing now. Grohl did it. Yeah, Axl did it. It's right. Like the hip thing now. Just stick in the chair.
Get in the chair. The throne.
Yeah, the throne.
The rock throne.
Everyone's gonna be using it now.
Yeah,
right.
Well, that'll be in the Hall of Fame. So during that 6 months, we met with Brian Burton, and he's like, you know, I dig your songs. The songs are cool, but if you really want to use my talent and what I'm good at, my forte, we should go in my studio and start from scratch. Just like write songs from scratch.
Wow.
And we're like, what? What do you mean write from scratch? You just start out with a drum beat and then we'll come up with a cool beat that we like. And then we'll just layer stuff almost in a hip hop kind of way. And Brian comes from
his background, right?
Yeah. And we're like, all right, I don't know. And there was some trepidation and some, you know, everyone was like, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
And I'm glad we did, because probably six of the songs, probably maybe almost half of the ones that are on the record are ones that we did that way.
The new ones, yeah.
Yeah. Off the like Dark Necessities, our first single, was a song that we wrote like that. And Brian's very musical. Like Rick doesn't play any instruments or anything. Brian plays a little bit of everything. And he's a studio rat. He's in there. He just loves to be in the studio. And that was good for us. And it challenged us to come up with a different way to the creative process, and challenged us. And, you know, he wouldn't settle for, you know, oh, that's pretty good. Or I like that. You know, it's like the verse is really good, but the chorus, it could be better, man. I want it to be classic. And he would come up with beats and he's like, you got to come up with a beat that like, when that comes on, I know what song that is. And I'm like, really? That's so easy. Sure.
Yeah, right.
Everyone's got to walk this way in. Rock and roll. Come on, man. So we worked hard. We did the whole record in 14 weeks, but it was great. It was really fun. Once we got over the initial like, once we were getting like really cool things and great music, and sending them actually to Anthony, wasn't even there when we were writing him. Then he was just going, oh man, I love this. It's great. We're great. So everyone was on board. And once we got that flow going, we were like, okay, we're doing the right thing.
That's the thing too. Like, you know, I'm sure it was like when Metallica stopped working with Bob Rock, you worked with Ruben for so many years. It's probably, you know, exactly how it's going to work. It doesn't really push you as much as it might if you have a new guy on the team.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Let's talk about Blood Sugar Sex Magic. Took Peppers from, like you mentioned, a theater band to a legit arena, huge, one of the biggest bands in the world at the time.
Yeah.
How did you hook up with Ruben in the first place?
We were trying to get out of our deal. We were on EMI Records at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And we had Mother's Milk out, and we didn't, it came and did good, but we just felt the people at EMI just didn't have a clue to what to do with us. They had, like, you know, Roxette and Richard Marx, and, you know, we didn't fit into their box.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We had one person there that was really great, and it was we were on record number 5, and I think that was the last one of the contract. And in the contract, it was like this many records in this many years. And if so, we just waited it out.
Oh, okay.
We did that. And they, you know, really wanted us because we were doing really good, but we just didn't want to be on EMI. So we went to all the records. We did the rounds. This is back when, like, big contracts.
Yeah,
the 80s. They were throwing money at us. And we were, like, flying to New York and getting wine and dined. And it was fun. And we went to Warner Brothers and met with Warner Brothers. And Warner Brothers, you know, is always... It's local. It's here in Burbank. We're a real LA band, and we had decided to sign with Epic because Epic came up with a monetarily giant offer, and at the time we're like, "Yes, we'll sign with them. How much? Yes,
we will sell out.
Yes, of course. Greatest label ever. What? They have Michael Jackson. Yes, we love them." But Warner's had Jimi Hendrix, Neil Young, Prince, like. Mo Austin, the president, started the label with Frank Sinatra Reprise back in the 60s, early 60s, something like that. And we met with them, and they offered us, made an offer, but it was fine, but it wasn't what the Epic one. We had, you know, Young Dollar Signs, and we had been a big label, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then they were having trouble getting us out of our EMI deal. There was a bar, they had to, like, give them a song or... buy it, you know, like a trading for a player or something.
Right.
I'm going to give you 2 draft choices and some cash kind of thing. And it wasn't happening. And we were waiting, which is actually good because we were still writing songs. And during that time, we met with Rick. And Rick had American Records. Still does.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it was Deaf American.
Probably
it was
Deaf American.
It was Deaf
then.
American.
Deaf American. From Deaf Jam to Deaf American. Yeah.
I went to when they had a funeral for Deaf American. I went to the cemetery where they buried it. And Rick's like, you know, I love you guys. I think you guys are great. Even if you don't decide to go with my label, I would love to produce you guys. And we're like, you know, Slayer and all these kind of really like, hard, you know, we're like, I don't know, man, you know. Mm-hmm. They like Slayer, but like nothing like us. We're
right.
Like, and he had, you know, he'd done the Black Crowes, which were really popular at the time. But we knew his history with hip hop. And obviously, you know, we've come from New York and Def Jam and Public Enemy and around
Beastie
DMC,
Boys. Yeah,
Beastie Boys. Know. Yeah. So, we had a lot of similar tastes, and Deaf American at the time was a smaller label. So we ended up signing with Warner because, I'll tell you what happened. We couldn't get out of the deal, when Epic wasn't really coming to the table with getting us out of the deal. And as it was going, we're like, they're in New York. And when we decided to sign with them, Mo Austin, the president of Warner Brothers, called each of us at our houses.
Wow.
Calling the drummer. Hey, Chad, it's Mo. Hi, Mo. Listen, man, I know you went with Epic, but, you know, good luck. And you know, we loved you guys, and we think the world of you. And we, you know, really just, you know, really appreciate you coming down and thinking of us, considering us. And I remember picking up the phone. I go, Fleet, I got the weirdest phone call. He goes, from Mo? I go, yeah. He goes, me too. I'm like, you did? He goes, and Anthony. I go, he's so cool. He goes, I know, man. I think we're making a bad move going with Epic. You know, they're right here. Da, da, da. So we ended up signing with Warner's for less money, but it's been great. And they were like, never, ever like, what are you guys doing? Or how much money? Or, you know, you should have this song out by then. They just total artistic.
They left
freedom,
you alone.
Left us alone.
Yeah.
And when we made Blood Sugar with Rick and at this house
now
up in Hollywood, yeah.
This haunted house? That's always the
It
room.
Was a little, yeah. Well, people think it was Houdini's mansion, but Houdini's house was across this Laurel Canyon. It was in, and there was actually a tunnel that went under Laurel Canyon.
Wow.
Which is kind of creepy.
Yeah.
But no, it was an old, yeah, just a crazy old house. I think a bunch of, I mean, there's so much history up there in Laurel Canyon. Like, you know, Hendrix has been there, and the Monkees lived there.
Yeah.
A bunch of people back in the 60s and took a lot of acid and stuff.
Did you ever see anything weird at the house?
I didn't, but we had security guys there because we had all of our equipment and everything there. And we went through like three security guys who like, sure, they heard the piano upstairs.
Wow.
Saw some lady in a white dress. I don't know if they were like up too long and smoking too much weed or I don't know what they're doing. But they, yeah, we had a couple guys, you know.
Yeah.
I'm out. I quit. What? No. There's a lady in a white dress. What? Yeah, she's right out there. I don't see anything.
All right, dude. Whatever.
Okay. Back to 7-Eleven for you.
Yeah, exactly.
a lot of history up there. Who knows? But it was a great vibe. There was nothing creepy or weird. And we loved playing. We loved, you know, being in a house. In normal recording studios, you know, they can be a little...
It's very sterile.
Yeah, a little dentist office-y and other people coming in and out and... So I think it was Rick's idea. I was like, let's rent a house, man. Let's just go up. And we lucked out, and it was a blast. We had a lot of fun up there.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Shenanigans happened. We made our record. We made it fast. It went well, and writing great songs. And I have very fond memories of that time.
Well, especially when talking about like Under the Bridge, which was your big breakthrough tune. I mean, give it away to an extent, but that was more of the old-fashioned Peppers college rock, funk rock, but then Under the Bridge comes out, which nobody expected.
No. A ballad?
Yes. What?
What?
You can't do that.
Heard of. No, and that's kind of the way it was, too, because Anthony had written it as a poem, I think, and I think Rick was at his house one day and saw on his notebook, his lyric book, like, well, what's this? You know, it's like a love letter to, you know, L.A., and well, why don't you, you know, let's make a song. No, it's not for the band. And you, I think he sang a little bit of it, like all kind of.
He had the melody, yeah.
You know, and as he would say, like all of out of tune. And Rick was like, this is great, man. You got to do that for John and have John come up with some chords. And that's what happened. And it's one of the only songs where the lyric and melody came before the music.
Mm.
One of the very few. It's always... The music inspires Anthony to come up with melodies and words. Maybe Californication, he had some words as well. And he was all shy about it, you know. He's like, because we'd never done anything, you know.
Yeah, exposed.
Slow or real stripped down. And I remember playing, thinking, yeah, it's cool, you know. It wasn't like, oh, yeah, this is the one.
Yeah.
People was like, did you know it when you wrote that song? I'm like, no. We were like, it almost didn't make the record.
Really? Because
we had Soul to Squeeze as well, which is another slower song. And we liked both of them. And we were like, I don't know, which one should we put on a record? I don't know. And I can't remember who.
So ridiculous that you couldn't put them both on, because you can't have two ballads on one.
No.
Record. Come on.
We're no, band. It's, yes, we're a rock band. We can't, you know, that putting one on was, ooh, that's really pushing it. So, we play that song, how many years now? 26 years. We probably play it nightly. But it's a great song.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great song. I don't care. Strip loud, soft, fast, hard. Good song, good song. I still love playing it, and people love it. I can't tell you how many times I've had a kid in the street and walking down in Istanbul somewhere, and like, I got to tell you how much the Under the Bridge means to me when I was having a hard time. You know, they come up to you.
Yeah.
And you're like, wow, this little song we kind of made up in our garage in Hollywood, you know, it's like transcended.
It's amazing how music affects people.
God.
You know?
It's incredible because sometimes you kind of feel like being a musician is like, you know, you're an entertainer and it's, you know, like a doctor or a lawyer or a teacher. Those are like real important jobs. Like being a musician, you know, sometimes I feel like, it's a goof. And it's just like what I've done, and I'm, you know, lucky to be in a band. But when something like that happens, and when you can go play somewhere and people are connecting with it, they're loving it, and they're singing, and they're smiling, and it makes them happy, and they forget about whatever the fuck is going on in their day, and at night they come see you for 2 hours. Sometimes I'm like, you know, this is pretty good what we do. This is really something.
It's funny because you say that, and then earlier in this conversation, we're talking about Cheap Trick playing and you and I singing every word to Surrender and Dream Police. And that's the same feeling that people have when you do Under the Bridge is what we had that night. And it's a time machine. It takes you back to a good time.
The feeling that you get when you're 14,
yeah.
me,
yeah.
And hearing those songs, I can remember where I was and the feeling in my gut and it's fantastic music, you know, it's
yeah.
fantastic that
yeah.
it has that effect you know, not all is timeless, but when you can connect with something, you get lucky and all the planets align, man, and you get a one song that works and people connect with it. It's powerful.
It's a magical thing.
Yeah, it's magical.
I was going to ask you about with Rick. I mean, and in my opinion, I'm not just saying this, you're one of the best drummers in the world, if not one of the best.
Absolutely
rock drummers
right. In the world. Yes, you are
the best rock drummer in the world.
Chris, you are a man of fine taste. I knew you were handsome and powerful, but also smart as well. Yes.
But you became almost Rick's house drummer.
Rick's boy.
Yeah. I mean, what have you played on?
I've been fortunate. Yes, Rick, you know, my relationship with him for a long time. I've got to play with some of the greatest music. I've got to play with Johnny Cash.
Wow.
I played with Johnny Cash. Amazing. Mm. He was doing those American recording records, I want to say 94. And Rick had done, I think he'd done it all just him. Or sorry, John. Like
very raw.
Yeah, just him with his guitar and singing. No band. And then Rick was like, let's see what these songs would sound like with the band. And I know he got the Heartbreakers on some of the stuff, which was great, and some other people that he'd been working with. But he was like, let's try it with Flea and Chad. And Mike Campbell from Tom Petty's band. I think that was it. And so, typical Rick, I'm sitting at home one night, and he calls me about 6 o'clock. And, hey, what's going on? Hey, it's Rick. Oh, hey, Rick. What are you doing, Chad? I'm having dinner. You want to come down to... I think it was called East. It's East West, but it's Ocean Way at the time, which is a little studio down in Hollywood, which is very close to my house. Yeah, I'll come down. Yeah, he says, yeah, I'm going to when I play with Johnny Cash. Yeah. Can't see me. I'm running.
Yeah, right.
The phone is dangling, and I'm like, so I'm the first one there, and I walk in, and the studio is a very famous studio. The Beach Boys, everyone, Sinatra, everyone had been there. It's old Hollywood. And we had done some records there. We've done lots of them now. But back then, I'd worked there before. Anyway, so I walk in, and you walk past the control room, and there's nobody in the control room. Okay. I keep walking. I go into the big tracking room. I'm going to check my drums to see if they're there and make sure everything's okay for Johnny Cash. And in the little vocal booth, which is like the size of a closet where people sing, because they're isolated from the band so it doesn't bleed into the microphones, I see Johnny Cash standing there, smaller than this. And he's got a music stand, and his glasses are down around his nose, and he's got his guitar, and he's looking through some music. And I'm like, walk up. I'm like, okay. And I mean, in my house, when I was growing up, my dad, Johnny Cash, Frank Sinatra, and Elvis, pretty much that's what we heard. Some other, like, my dad was kind of a hillbilly.
All right, but those are your staples.
Are the staples. Yeah. And like, I'm like, this is old people's music, Volume 4 by Sabbath. This is the shit. But luckily, it was great music. And so I walk up, and I'm like nervous, like nobody's business. And I'm like, I'm Mr. Cash. I'm Chad. I'm the drummer. And he goes, and he turns to me, and he goes, hey. I'm Johnny Cash, like in that voice. And I'm just like, I can't do it. But I was like, I know. And he immediately is like, you know, I got this song from Dolly Parton that she wants me to do. It's called Bird on a Wire. Goes like this. Starts singing this. I'm as close to you. Starts singing the song in that voice. And I'm like, what do you think of that? I go, oh, that's great. Yeah, we should do that. That would be great. I had this other one from this kid, this Danzig boy that Rick knows. It's called 13. What do you think of this? He plays. I'm getting a private Johnny Cash
concert.
I just met the guy. And I'm like, yep, that's great. We should do that one too. He sounded so great. And he was the coolest. I mean, immediately we were peers. Like, you know, he just, you know, it,
if Rick is bringing you in, then he knows you're the real deal. So let's get down to business, right?
Well, I hope, you know, yeah. I mean, I appreciate that. And yeah, he was, but the whole session, you know, we came in, we played, he was always asking, you know, well, what do you think? Should we do that? Or maybe we should go to the chorus earlier. What do you think, Chad? And I'm like, yeah, it sounds good like that or no or whatever. But it was refreshing that he was just, you know, open to anything and was really embracing having Rick, who was so great with him. I think if Rick didn't do anything else, the stuff he did with Johnny Cash was so important, certainly at that time in his career, and what a important person, an iconic person that Johnny Cash is and was. But yeah, to be able to do that, you know. Anyway, we did a bunch of stuff, and it, like five songs. And it was amazing. It was a highlight. If my dad was alive, he would have.
he would have finally made it.
He would have been like, yeah, okay. You play with Johnny Cash? That's pretty good. All right. But, you know, Dixie Chicks Records, I got to play with them. I'd done everything from Wu-Tang Clan to...
Kid Rock, you did?
Kid Rock with him. I did... you know, Avid Brothers, ZZ Top, Jennifer.
So let me ask you this: Why would he bring you in for a ZZ Top record?
Because they have Frank Beard,
yeah,
who's great.
Because sometimes guys aren't nailing the part or something like that, maybe. Or
I think it was just two songs he had me play on, and for whatever reason, it wasn't getting what he was looking for. And I've done that a few times where he just kind of calls me in, not to do the whole record, but just like, oh, there's this song and that. Try this, do this. And it's probably because he wasn't happy with what was played. But, yeah, he's, you know, he lives out in Malibu and he's got this old Shangri-La studio that the band used to have. Mm-hmm. Bob Dylan's mobile Winnebago's in the back. And it's beautiful. It's by the ocean. In most studios, you know, you're like out in the parking lot in the valley somewhere. And it's
yeah,
like 100 degrees.
Yeah, yeah.
This is like Shangri-La.
Right.
It's fantastic. So, yeah, it's 5 minutes from my house. So
did you
maybe that's part of it? He's like, oh, no, yeah, he'll be here. Like,
he's 10 easy.
Minutes. He's easy. But I think you know.
Did you ever
great experience?
Did you ever have any talks about doing the Sabbath record? I was surprised that you didn't do 13.
And that was the thing. I called him on that, and I heard. I was like, dude, isn't there like one song?
Yeah, of all the bands you have me play, I can't do Sabbath.
He's like, nope. Brad, sounds great. Nope.
Really?
Great. I was like, dah.
Were you not available when they started, or
no?
Was it just
he wanted Brad.
Maybe
Brad did a great job.
Oh yeah.
Brad did a great job. Yeah. Selfishly, I would be like, oh my god,
can I hit a cymbal or anything, please?
Yeah, I play a tambourine in the background. I want my name next to Geezer's, whose name is Terry.
Yes,
I did not know that.
You didn't know that?
No,
very un-rock and roll name.
Yeah,
which is why it was Geezer. So much,
because I went to this charity event recently and he was playing and they were honoring Glenn and Glenn Hughes and from Deep Purple and Robin Zander, and they were doing Matt Sorum did this thing.
Oh, like the Varvatos thing or something like that?
It was for Adopt the Arts that Matt Sorum does for kids for music and art, which is great. And Geez was on it. And Glenn, who's known him forever, all those, you know, Midland dudes all know each other. And he's, you know, Terry, you know, I'm like, Terry?
You never knew that all these years?
No!
Oh, that's hilarious, man. I was a magazine reader, so I read every damn thing, so I knew that.
Okay.
But Geezer. So talking just a few more things, you mentioned it earlier, talking about Coverdale calling you Will Ferrell.
Yeah, and Coverdale looking like an old woman. He was looking rough. He had, I don't know what, you know, he had some stuff done and he had a lot of makeup on.
But he also had
lip gloss and
he had
hair.
The hair. That was
like
the weird
Phyllis
thing.
Diller or something.
He had great hair, but not when you're like 65 or whatever he is. It's just too much hair.
It was weird.
Yeah, weird. But how the famous thing, it was like for years, people go, oh yeah, Chad Smith looks like Will Ferrell. Then you finally, I'm sure you were probably sick of hearing that through the years. Do you think it's fun or did you even see the resemblance?
A little bit, but not to where, I mean, people would come up to me. I mean, I go to Laker games, right? I go to Laker games all the time. And people come up to me and they're like, you know, you take a picture.
Convinced.
Convinced. Like, and I'm like, sure, you know, because some people are like, oh, you know, I love your band or I think you're a good drummer. Oh, thanks. And so they're like, you know, you are so funny. I just, you know, Elf is my favorite movie. I mean, I used to be like, no, I know, no, but actually, I'm not. I play in a band, and people are like, what?
Yeah, yeah.
So now I was just like, it's easier just take the picture. And they go
get
away.
On your way.
Except
right.
this one kid. I was playing in a charity hockey game like the ones that we did.
We're going to talk about that at the end. Yeah,
and it was in L.A. and I think we played before the game or at halftime or in the middle of a period or something. And we played, and I'm standing there, and a kid comes up to me. He's a little Asian kid. He comes up to me. He's got one of those little hockey sticks, little, you know, things you can buy from the concession stand. You sign for me? Oh, sure, man. Sign, give it back. Comes back like 2 minutes later. What to say? No Will Ferrell. I crushed him. But anyway, so yeah, for years, I've been getting it, you know, and he become more popular now. He's a big movie star, but when he was on Saturday Night Live, you know, it was a little bit. But once he became what we know is today, it's a huge international superstar, I've been getting a lot. So fast forward to whatever, I can tell you about the first time that we met.
Oh, that, yes.
Do you know that?
No, I don't know the story. No.
First time we met, and I told him about this, and he doesn't even remember.
Did people ever tell him he looked like the drummer from the Chili Peppers?
He did. Okay. But he got it like...
It's not the same.
No, like once in a while. He's obviously much more famous.
Yeah.
But we had mutual friends like Woody Harrelson, and they'd be like, you know, hey, you know, the guy in the Peppers. He's like, yeah, you know, I guess so. Yeah. I don't know. So anyway, he was in a movie. You remember the offshoot Ladies Man from Saturday Night?
Yeah. Yeah.
The Ladies. Ladies Man. Yeah. They made a movie out of it.
Yeah. One of the many great movies.
Yeah. Let's make a movie.
Yeah. Mm-mm.
Anyway, he's in it. I'm at the screening or something. I was dating a person at the time who worked at Paramount, and we went to like a screening. It wasn't the premiere. It was in like on the lot, right? Mm-hmm. So it's the cast and some people, not a lot of people. We watched a movie afterwards. This is a buffet, and you go eat and have your drinks or whatever, and there's a buffet, and I see Will Ferrell over there, and I'm like, I'm not going to go up to the guy or say anything to him, you know, whatever. So I go over, and I'm getting my chicken skewers and my shrimps or whatever, and there's a guy next to me, and then Will walks over, and he starts making a plate of food, I guess, and I'm with my food, and as soon as I turn to walk away, the guy between us walks away, and Will and I literally turn to each other with our food, right? And he looks at me, and he looks me up and down, and he goes, you're very handsome. And walks away. And I was like, that's funny. He's funny.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But he doesn't remember that at all. So we never met. Fast forward, we played at the Super Bowl a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And a couple days after, he was doing a Reddit AMA thing. And one of the questions was, you know, you look like the drummer from Red Hot Chili Peppers. And he went into this thing and like, no, it's impossible. There is no Will Ferrell, only Chad Smith. So I hear about this. I'm like, well, I don't think so. Let's see how good you can play the drums. And we have our drum off.
So how did this come about? Like, did Fallon call you or?
No. I can't remember exactly.
You challenged
him? I challenged him. Yeah, I said, okay, you say you're me, you're crazy, you're delusional, da-da-da-da-da. Yeah. I called him out. I'm like, I challenge you to a drum off. And then he said, if we can raise X amount of money, I can't remember what it was, $300,000 or $400,000, I will accept your challenge and I will accept your drum off challenge.
Yeah.
I can't remember exactly what it was. Something funny like.
Yeah, yeah.
And sure enough, like, a week later, $400,000 for Cancer for College, which is his charity. So then we're like, okay. So he calls me. Hey, Dan, thanks for doing this. It's so great. And, you know, really super nice. I saw you once shopping at Barney's, but I didn't want to come up to you. And I'm like, I saw you once at this thing, but do you remember you told me I was handsome? Nope. Okay. And he was super nice. And so I first thought Saturday Night Live would be a good place to do it, the Cowbell.
Right.
And he was like, nah, you know, I think, you know, they won't get it. The bit, you know, the thing between me and you, we should do it maybe on a chat show, maybe Conan or and Jimmy Fallon had just kind of started his show. And I said, well, you're friends with Fallon, you know, and he's like, hey, I said, I think we should do it on Fallon. He said, well, okay. Because Jimmy loves that competition.
Perfect for it.
So, yeah, and he's musical.
He loves music.
Exactly. You know, and then he asked me, did you think your guys would come out and play? You know, and I said, sure, yeah. The guys were like, oh, great. We finally put an end to this Will Ferrell crap, right? I'm like, yeah, this will be great. We're in the same place, finally. So they're like, oh, we need you to send some clothes that you'll be wearing. I'm like, what do you mean? Like, whatever you would wear. I'm like, okay, I wear jeans and a T-shirt. Yeah, so you just send that to the, you know, Tonight Show. I'm like, okay. Then I know that they wanted him to
dress. Oh, you didn't know that?
No, I didn't know why. I should have put two and two together. So we go to the thing. I get there. I see him. We're hanging out. I'm like, yeah, he kinda, you know, maybe in the eyes a little bit, you know. Yeah, but he's tall, big guy. And so we, okay. So we, I walk by his dress room like 15 minutes later, and he's dressed like me. Exactly.
Exactly. Hat on backwards.
Hat, shoes.
I think it was a Kiss shirt.
Kiss shirt. Yeah. I'm like, oh, this is creepy. He does look like me. Oh, God, this is going to be weird. So we get ready to do the show. And I don't go on chat shows and talk on
the couch. As the star, yeah.
I'm the drummer. I sit in the back. I'm happy with that. I'm kind of nervous. We're literally standing right before the show is about to start. And he turns to me and he goes, hey, what about when we go out there? You be me and I'll be you. And I'm like, what? Go. I'm like, so it worked out great because I just had to like be the straight guy.
Yeah.
I didn't have to be the mad guy that you said you were me. And he just went and did his thing. And then we drummed off and the band came on and played the Buell Blue Oyster Cult song and he got the cover.
Yeah.
And people loved it.
It was brilliant.
And it went nuts. So we were like, wow. Who knew that, like, just because a couple of guys sort of look like each other, I know Will's a big star or whatever, but so let's do some good. So 3 weeks ago, we did a thing at the Shrine.
Oh.
And we had, and he goes, I'll bring some comedians, you bring some music and some drummers, we'll have another drum off, and we'll raise money. And I was like, yeah. And so I got Devo. And Chili Peppers played a set, and then he brought some comedians, Jim Gaffigan and some other guys, and he kind of emceed and did some stuff, and sold out in 2 days.
Yeah.
It was great. And then we had a drum off, and the drum off was, we weren't going to battle each other anymore. We'd done that. Boo. But we have teams. Okay. And on my team, I've got Taylor from the Foo Fighters. Mm-hmm. I got Tommy Lee, rock legend, and my last drummer, Stuart Copeland.
Oh, geez.
I win.
Yeah,
right?
Totally.
I win.
Can't beat that.
He's got a 14-year-old kid from Brentwood, Fred Armisen, who's funny, who can play, yeah. But, you know, he's a funny guy. And then he brings out Mick Fleetwood,
okay,
who plays Tusk in the whole U.S. marching band comes down the freaking aisle way and on stage I lose again.
He got you.
Got me.
And I bet you the 14-year-old kid was a badass too.
He was pretty good.
There you go.
He wasn't bad. But it was great and it was good spirit and we raised a bunch of money for our charity.
I was so happy for you. I was like, for finally, for the first time, Chad is the most famous guy in the Chili Peppers.
That's what the other guys in the band too. They were like, wow, that 1 week, like, I'm in this turnaround arts program that the president runs, and some artists, your ambassadors to underperforming schools. You want to put art and music in schools. And so I went and I met Obama and Michelle Obama, and my son met him and hugged him. And that was like on Tuesday. And then on like Thursday, I'm on the Tonight Show. And like, the guys are like, geez, Chad, you're wow.
You want to be on the cover of the next record? Like Angus Young on every DC record?
No, they were like, wow. Now it's like every other day, it's like, yeah, I saw that thing on the Tonight Show. That was really funny. You're really funny. I'm like, oh, I know. Okay, thank you.
I think it's one of those things on YouTube. It has like 50 million hits or something, like viral.
Yeah, no, it went viral crazy. Yeah. So, but yeah.
Last story. The first time we ever met was at the Christopher Reeve.
Yes. Super Skate.
Super Skate. which was such a great thing. Awesome. And I was excited because I'm a big Peppers fan from, you mentioned, 88 and beforehand. And said, Chad Smith will be there. He's a goalie. I'm like, oh, of course. If you're a drummer, you're crazy. If you're a goalie, you're crazy. If you're a drummer and a goalie, you're out in left field.
That's
Forget
me.
It.
That's me.
So do you remember what we did, though? Like,
Yeah, I remember. And I was really happy to meet you. And I was like, wow, and you're like, I'm a big fan. So we had a mutual thing. It was great. And he's like, I love music. And I was like, wow. Yeah, so I'm playing goal. Sort of. I'm not really playing goal. I'm wearing the equipment.
It's standing there, yeah.
I'm standing. I'm not moving too much.
But how cool is that? We got to play hockey in the Garden.
The Garden.
Yeah, awesome. In Madison Square Garden. Fantastic. Against some Rangers and some celebrities and the whole thing.
Who's the guy that the great hair was on the Rangers?
Tim.
Ron Duguay.
Ron Duguay, yeah.
Great hair. Yeah. Still.
Great hair still.
Still great.
Just his hair, yeah.
I loved it. No, I got to do a few of those things. It was great. I got to play in Boston Garden before the Garden went down with the McKenzie brothers.
Oh, that's cool, yeah.
Awesome. Those things are fun. But, so I'm playing goal. And about halfway through, I think we're going to switch or bring in another goalie, or I was going to play for the other team or something like that. At the end of the first period, you come over and you go, hey, listen, this is what we're going to do. I'm like, what? You're like, I'm going to come down. I'm going to, like, bump the net. And then you're going to get, like, really mad at me, right? And I'm like, this is like WWE. Yeah. This is great. Yeah? And then you, like, grab my sweater and you pull it over. And then we're going to kind of, like, we had a whole thing. I was like, okay. And then, you know, girl, you go on to the ground and, you know, and then I pull the sweater over and that'll be it. I'm like, okay, great. So, Chris, very nice that he took it easy on me. Comes down, we bump. I get very angry, and we're going at it a little bit. Of course, goalie in these charity games, the normal players, they don't even think they wear.
You don't wear a helmet, no. Maybe, but most people don't.
Yeah, it's not a lot of checking or any sort of
slap shots.
No, nothing too or fast.
Yeah,
it's all kind of for fun. So Chris is unprotected, and I got my goalie mask on. And we get onto the ground, and I got a little caught up in the moment. I start just kind of swinging at him, and I gave you a bloody nose, right? Oh, I can't believe it! And I really didn't even know it. He was like, Chad, you're taking this a little too. But it was great. You're like, okay, pull a sweater. Okay, now, throw me a couple lefts. Okay, push me down.
I was calling the spot.
Totally. It was so fun.
Because what I used to do every year, because it's a charity game, so I'd always get in a fight with somebody.
Yeah.
I got in a fight with Dennis Leary once and whoever the hell was. And then when I saw him, I was like, right off the bat, this guy's a good dude. Yeah. I bet you he'll want to do this.
Oh, yeah.
And so when we did the thing, I said, I'll swing at you. You move back and attack me. And I remember you just hit me and go, holy shit, this guy's nailing me.
Take it easy.
And the next day I had a blender, but I also had like a mouse above my eye.
No!
I had to go to work. And what happened? It's like, oh, I got in a fight with the drummer from the Chili Peppers.
It was awesome. That was so great.
Such a great way, Matt. And we've been friends.
And that's how friendship starts. Yeah,
exactly,
right there.
Exactly.
No, you were such a good sport about the whole thing. I didn't even know, but I was, you know, Madison Square Garden, you know.
So much fun to be involved in that, man.
Yeah. You know? I mean, obviously great charities, but you know, you get to live out your little childhood
Absolutely.
Dream, you know.
That's one cool thing when you get to a certain level, as you mentioned, to go play hockey in the Garden with the Rangers. It was like, I don't think I've played much since then because I'm so spoiled now where it's like, you can't top that. What am I going to do? You know, go play at the rec hall with a bunch of, you know, the beer leagues or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's pretty cool. I got to do one, and I have a picture of myself and Gordie Howe and Mario Lemieux.
Oh, man.
And I'm like, because I grew up in Detroit, so right. Gordie Howe.
That's the guy.
And so I was like, man, this, you know, wow, this doesn't get much,
you much
know,
better than that.
Yeah, it didn't get much better than that. So, no, I've been fortunate to be part of a few of those things. It's been a while. I think probably lost my number. I retired.
right.
I was terrible. But I just loved, when I was a kid, I played sports and I loved stuff with equipment. I always wanted to be the catcher.
Mm.
I wanted to be the goalie. And drumming, I don't, you know, whatever. I started really young, but something attracted me to whether it's stuff, but also like you're the anchor, you're the heart, you're the
good point,
you're the, you know,
quarterback,
you're the quarterback, so to speak, and that somehow in my whatever, I don't know, it's part of my personality, but I was thinking about that the other day. I was like, why don't I get attracted to...
You like carrying gear around? What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
Why do you think I'm a singer? I show up with a mic stand and a microphone, and I leave.
How many nights? I'd be like hammered. I'd be looking in the drums of the last thing, just sitting there. Everyone else took their amp, and the guy took his mic, and I've got this 12-piece wannabe Rush drum set that's got to go in the back of my car.
And, screws and unhook the cymbals.
It's a pain in the ass. But I was never the glory. I wanted to be,
the man behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Last question. It's a two-pronged one. What's your favorite Chili Pepper song to play live?
Uh-oh. Saving a tough one.
Yeah, and what's your favorite? Do you have a favorite obscure Pepper song on one of the records or maybe on the new record that you haven't really played much?
Favorite to play live? Well, the new ones are always going to be, we haven't really done it yet. And as you know, when you got a new record, it's like so fun to play the new stuff. We played Dark Necessities in Columbus the other day, and it was like,
it's great.
Woo! Yeah! Everyone's all excited. People are like, okay.
The band is excited.
The band is like,
what is this?
I never heard it. What is this? Yeah, I'm excited to play new songs, but I don't know. It kind of depends. It depends. It changes.
Mm-hmm.
It changes.
Depending on the vibe of the room.
Yeah, the place and where we are on tour and Give It Away is always fun to play. People love that. It's always usually our last song.
Which is always the best.
No, I'm done after this. I'm so fortunate to be grateful to be able to play our music for people, but... the obscure song, there's a song on, maybe it's not that obscure because the record was kind of popular, but on Californication, there was a song called Porcelain, which is I think it's the only song I ever played brushes on, Chili Peppers on. And it's a really kind of weird.
Interesting. Yeah. Great choice, too.
Yeah. I really like that song. It's really heavy and moving and powerful and like, but it's really sparse and kind of sounds like a broken record a little. I don't know, something about it just like recaptured that thing. And yeah, I like that. And I don't think we play it live.
Yeah.
I didn't play it live, but because it's kind of weird when people be like, what? but that's the one that I kind of like.
Dude, it's great talking to you, man. This has been great.
Thank you. So we didn't get to talk about you.
Oh, we don't have to talk. When you get a podcast, you can talk about me.
I got to get my own podcast.
And in a couple days, I'll text you, I'm not pregnant.
Mrs. Carlos.
Yes. Mrs. Carlos, if you're listening to this, Mrs. E. Carlos, we love you.
All right, the new Red Hot Chili Peppers record is called The Getaway. It's out today. You know where you can get it on Amazon, and please use those Talk is Jericho Amazon links. If you do, go to Podcast One, click on the Killer Deals button in the top right corner of the page, then hit the Talk is Jericho button. I got Amazon links for Canada, USA, and the UK. No hidden fees or extra charges. Amazon just kicks back a small percentage of what you purchase to this show to help us cover production costs. So get the new Chili Peppers record, The Getaway. Support the Peppers. Support Talk is Jericho in the process. Thank you so much, by the way, as well, to Chad Smith for taking the time to appear on the show. Great conversation. Can't believe how fast it went. Funny guy, man. It's super, just a cool vibe. Good guy to be around. And I was really, really honored and excited to get a chance to talk to my old friend Chad. Hopefully, I'll get a chance to have him back very soon. Although it looks like he's going to be on the road for a while because the Chili Peppers start their tour June 29th in Denmark at the Roskilde Festival. They're doing a bunch of summer rock festivals in Europe before doing a full European headlining tour this fall. And then heading back into the States either late this year or early next year. And you do not want to miss the Red Hot Chili Peppers live. They are one of the best live bands you could ever see and ever will see. RedHotChiliPeppers.com. Go check them out. Check out The Getaway. Thank you to Chad Smith. And thanks to you guys for listening. And if you don't already subscribe to this podcast, get your ass to iTunes and hit that subscribe button. Go ahead and leave a comment or two and a 5-star rating while you're there. We love your feedback, and your comments and ratings are what keep us moving up the iTunes chart and give us some presence on there. So once again, I appreciate it, and I appreciate you listening to the show, and keep listening for the 60-second AP news updates coming up next. Stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs. You have a great weekend. And next Wednesday, number one movie in the world today right now is The Conjuring 2. Have you seen it? It's terrifying. Have you seen the original Conjuring? Even scarier, dealing with the Perrin family and the haunted house they lived in for years and years and years. On the show, show on Wednesday. Andrea Perron will be here. It's going to be the true story behind The Conjuring. You think watching the movie was scary? Wait until you hear the real stories of what really happened to the parents in their household that inspired the movie The Conjuring, that inspired the movie The Conjuring 2. Andrea is going to be here, and trust me, it is going to give you goosebumps. A lot of people always say, when do you have another paranormal show? When is your next ghost stories or UFOs or whatever? I got the granddaddy of the ghosts, the granddaddy of the haunted houses, the granddaddy of the demonic possession that the Perron family went through. Andrea Perron is going to be here on Wednesday, so do not listen to this podcast at night. It's going to scare you. We'll see you on Wednesday. Take care and a big yeah, boy!
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.